What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
So Macbeth brings the murderers in, and I love that the names of the trial just murderer one, murderer two, because that's all you have to know about them.
Yeah, I mean, what would have been the point in confusing everybody with extra names?
Yes. Jeff, Travis, and Dave, or you know, whatever it may be.
Bill and Bob.
Yeah. But there's an interesting point here as well where you can tell that Macbeth is just basically sowing them with your ill fortune is because of Banquo. And so if you kill Banquo for me, I will raise your fortunes. Oh, and make sure, of course, you kill his son as well. And Macbeth talks about the fact that he gives this analogy of they're like dogs. You know, there are so many breeds of dog, and every one of them has their own advantages. They have their own particular skill set, and they have their own demerits. And you're just like dogs. You're just like dogs.
Charming.
And what you're good at is killing.
How flattering.
Yeah. And so it's not just Macbeth, the evil in Macbeth as well. It's his ability to bring evil out of others. You know, it constantly speaks to the very way that he deals with these murderers, you know, gives us an insight into how he will govern the entire kingdom, which is to reduce them to their base instincts, to make them adhere to the principles that he cares about, their own self-interest, which is material advancement, which Banquo didn't give them, it's not really explained, and obviously as well to make sure that they transgress as many of the divine laws, you know, of nature as they possibly can. And they go through with this. And so we do get a very quick scene of Banquo being murdered by one thing as well, actually, is that Macbeth speaks to two murderers in the scene, but three murderers go to kill Banquo, which suggests to us that Macbeth was so insecure about the deed being done that he sent one guy to make sure that the other two guys do it properly. You know, there's this continuing escalation of like, distrust of everyone around him. It speaks to this internal paranoia.
I'd not picked up on that. I would have just assumed that this was just a third character that the other murderers got involved into it as well. But that's an interesting interpretation.
Yeah. No, they don't know who he is when he comes. Like, who sent you? It's like, oh, Macbeth sent him.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Macbeth is really just going over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Already, almost immediately.
Mm. And so they murder Banquo, and it's very sad, brings a tear to your eye. But Fleance, his son, does manage to escape, because fate willed it, I suppose.
Yes.
The witch's prophecy said there would be a...
And how would his progeny end up being kings down the line if his progeny get snuffed out?
So there you are. These murderers could kill big, powerful, proud Banquo, but they couldn't kill a child. That child got away. And
it does raise the question: what's in it for the witches? Like, what is the purpose of? Are they purposefully trying to sow discord? Do they have their own motivations operating in the background that we're just not witness to, or are they prophets of fate who aren't actually in control or believe or know why they're presenting the things that they are, but they just have to?
Mm. It's often a cut from most standard editions of Macbeth, but there is also the character of Hecate, who the witches do seem to answer to, and who Hecate doesn't actually seem to have a great deal of liking or confidence in, the members of the coven. But it does speak to, I think, something older, obviously Hecate coming from the ancient Greek tradition of mythology, so I think it speaks to something primordial, something more ancient than Christian morality. But obviously something very, very volatile and very dangerous as well.
Well, again, that brings to the question, though. If they are an expression of kind of like an ancient evil from before the times of Christian grace bringing true morality and connection to the divine to the European peoples, why would they also predict the future of Banquo? Why would Hecate also present to them this idea that Banquo's children will be kings and that Banquo himself is lesser and yet greater? Are they agents of chaos? Is there a grander plan that they're working towards? Are they secret agents of the English who want to destabilize the Scottish monarchy and put the new Scottish monarch of Malcolm in the English's debt forever?
Based witches.
That's a question that I have.
Well, there's absolutely something in that, what you say, though, which is the fact that, of course, in order for Banquo's children to eventually become, to set up this dynasty, of course, there is an implication that the events of Macbeth had to take place, that all of these horrid things had to happen so we can get to a more enlightened destination down the road, which is often a theme of...
Other than Macbeth being dethroned by the end, it's Malcolm and therefore Duncan's line still on the throne. So that would mean down the line, the only thing that we could assume is that either the Duncan's line become dethroned or that Banquo's family marries into Duncan's line somewhere.
Yeah. And of course, as well, around all of this, there is the larger meta point about James I and Banquo being his ancestor, alleged.
James, guess what? Your ancestor didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
Didn't do nothing wrong. It was all that evil Macbeth.
Lot of finger wagging in the audience that night.
Could you believe how naughty Macbeth was?
Yeah.
Not that Banquo, though. What an honourable hero.
A very dead hero, although not so dead, it turns out, because Macbeth is about to get quite a shock at dinner with all of his vassals about him. And we see here as well a real window into the fact that... So Macbeth is at the feasting hall and all of his lords are around him and Lady Macbeth is there. And we do see in it a charismatic king. We see someone who is able to work a crowd, someone who, under other circumstances, could inspire loyalty in his bannermen. But of course, the problem is it's all been built on evil and lies.
Start as you mean to go on.
Yes. And so immediately, Macbeth, they're constantly trying to get him to, sit on our bench, my lord, sit with us. And Macbeth sees that the murderers have come back. And so he goes over there and he sees that one of them has blood on them. And he tells him, well, it's Banquo's blood. Excuse me. And immediately overjoyed, of course, by this. But upon hearing that Fleance had escaped, all of a sudden, that prophecy is looking really believable right now. Mm-hmm. And if my prophecy was true from the witches, why wouldn't Banquo's prophecy be true as well? But for the time being, to be honest with you, I would say that Macbeth takes it quite well. In terms of his, like, well, you know, you've killed a man that I absolutely despised, and we'll get Fleance another day. But then,
you don't realise, Mr. Murderers, Fleance was the brains behind the whole operation. Really, we need to.
Well, in fact, really, it's like you think that Macbeth would have been more contented had Banquo lived and Fleance had been killed.
Mm.
But it happened to be that way round. And of course, that sows into his insecurity. And this is all just thrown into this moment where Banquo's ghost appears. Now, Shakespeare loves a ghost.
Yeah, but the adaptations never do. Even in the Royal Shakespeare...
Which sucks.
Yeah, it's annoying. Even in the adaptation, the 79 adaptation, it's delivered as though Ian McKellen is just breaking down at the sight of nothing and we have to assume that he's seeing it.
Mm.
Same thing with the 2015 one, you don't
see... Same thing with the dagger. None of these things are there, but they are in his mind and he does.
You don't get in the 2015 film him talking to the ghost of Banquo. You just get him shouting at absent space.
Mm.
And it's annoying because It was annoying with the 79 version because it just felt a little bit like a little tiny bit of added laziness.
Mm.
With the 2015 version, after the battle, Banquo and Macbeth both run into the Weird Sisters.
Mm.
And so you get the confirmation of the Weird Sisters being real people
mm.
through Banquo being there as well.
Yes.
But the rest of the film does portray it almost like they're just in his head.
Mm.
Like, so that would make sense as to why they portray it so that you're not seeing the ghost of Banquo.
Because the guilt and the crime is personal to him.
Yeah,
his conscience.
You could say that he's just gone mad and he's screaming at visions or that he's screaming at things that aren't there. But again, the fact that Banquo sees them at the beginning as well, I think if they wanted to go with a fuller interpretation of what they seem to be gesturing at, that they should have just had it so that Banquo was, like, maybe he only shows up after they've already left or something. And he's just paranoid about Macbeth because, I mean, come on, it's obvious that Macbeth's the one that killed Duncan. And Macbeth is paranoid because he's the one who heard the prophecy about Banquo. So it felt a little bit like a half interpretation there because it felt like they were trying to say, no, this is all in Macbeth's head. Because outside of that one scene, he's the only one who ever interacts with the Weird Sisters. Mm. Again, they skip out Hecate. Because nobody ever wants to adapt Hecate either. Poor old Hecate.
Nobody mourns for Hecate and her coven.
Tragedy. But I do like in the play that it is... Doesn't Banquo deliver a few lines as well as a ghost?
No, I don't believe that Banquo has any lines in the play. But as a ghost...
Banquo's ghost, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Banquo's ghost doesn't say anything. But obviously the hysteria that Macbeth treats with... all of this with is entirely in the presence of all of his men. And Lady Macbeth...
There's a bit of a dampener on the whole thing.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Lady Macbeth's like, you have killed the atmosphere in here.
Bro,
yeah.
You've killed the mood.
It was such a nice vibe.
I'm coming down now.
and so are the lords as well. But obviously the thing that she's terrified of is if this mania continues, he's just going to confess to the entire thing in front of all of these people. And I believe it's Ross eventually ends up having a scene where he says, yeah, I was on the fence, but that tipped me over the edge, you know. So it's too late. It's too late. By the time that he has done this, any hopes that Macbeth may have had in ruling over a stable kingdom and getting to enjoy all of the things that you highlighted in part one of the discussion about just, you know, having the big castles and having the fancy trumpets, you know, call for you when you come, and the golden chat, all of that's gone. It's like, you're not going to enjoy that. You haven't got time to enjoy those things now because everyone knows that you're guilty and everyone is going to raise war against you.
Well, it's an interesting thing as well, is that the play was written in a time that's currently thought of as a time of monarchy and absolution.
Mm.
Absolutism, where the monarch was seen as this all-powerful figure that nobody could contradict, and it took a civil war and it took the parliament rising up to actually unseat that. This is very clear that, no, the kingship has never been such a secure position.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's ridiculous for people to think back and think that the king was this kind of figure where he could just snap his fingers and what he wants happens. Because plays like this go to show that even back then they were well aware that you need the support.
Mm.
You need the support of your allied castles around you, or else they will just raise banners and usurp you. Mm.
Well, just look at the Kingdom of England and its portrayal in the play, of course. It's the court of Edward the Confessor, and it shows that... England is being ruled wisely and well, but by a pious man who understands morality and faith, and you know that he himself is a servant of something higher than himself.
And it all went so wrong so soon after.
And then, of course, we have Hastings, and we know all of the instabilities that led to. So yes, even in a good kingdom, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, all this sorrow isn't around the corner. All we can do is obviously try to steady the realm as much as we can, and try to govern in the best way that, you know, in the most harmonious way possible that works for the king, the lords, and all of the subjects. And so we get to a point where the Scottish lords are becoming very, very suspect of Macbeth now, and Macbeth decides at the beginning of Act 4 that he will go and see the witches once more. Because at this point as well, he's dependent on them as well. This is the thing. Banquo, in shunning them, never outsourced his agency to his, you know, to his wife, to the witches, to no one. Banquo was his own man, and he knew his own moral compass. Macbeth has become entirely dependent on prophecy, on ambiguous, you know, soothsayings, and it's like,
and that's that. What he gets from this meeting with them as well, like, Macbeth shall fear no man born of woman.
Mm.
It's so ambiguous as to what that even means, really. Obviously, you find out that what it means was that a man who was naturally born by a woman, and the loophole is a cesarean section. Mm. But Macbeth just kind of assumes, oh, I'm immortal then, basically. I'm invincible in battle.
And what's more as well, with that invincibility, it gives him license to be as tyrannical as he wants.
Oh,
because he can do it without anyone hurting him.
He completely indulges in his hubris.
Yes. And then you get this... we get the beware of Macduff. He's just told point blank. You won't be killed by any man of woman born, which gives him this feeling of invincibility. And then, of course, you know, it'll all come to ruin for you when Birnam Wood marches on Dunsinane, on Macbeth's castle, and is like, well, the forest is never going to get up and move. And obviously this is what ended up inspiring Tolkien with the March of the Ents.
Oh, yeah.
On Isengard, which is just tremendous, that the forest literally does get up and move. But there's another point as well here, which is that for all of the witches talking there, you know, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, I also just wanted to read a passage from one of the other things that they say as well, when they're brewing their potions and they're prophesying and they're getting all the magic together to show Macbeth these things. And they say, of the ravined salt sea shark, root of hemlock diggeth dark, liver of blaspheming dew, gall of goat and slips of ewe, silvered in the moon eclipse, nose of Turk and Tartar's lips. Now, all of these things, you know, hemlock, ewe, these are poison elements in herbology. These are, and obviously, you know, the idea of blaspheming Jews and Turks, Muslim Turks and Tartars. It's basically everything anti-Christian.
Yeah.
Is going into everything, every heretical thing is going into this.
Specifically the Turk's nose, the least Christian part of a Turk's body, as determined by science.
And Shakespeare.
Well, we know this now.
Yes. He was ahead of the game, that Shakespeare, on the Turk's nose. And then he gets shown
my,
this.
My pub, I'm going to call it the Turk's
nose. The Turk's nose.
when I start my own pub,
yeah,
that's the first one that's going to be. The next one is going to be called the Blaspheming Jew, but it's probably not going to go down as well.
The Tartar's lips.
Oh, jeez. No, that'll be my whorehouse.
Well, there's that pub in Manchester, the Lower Turk's Head, which I go in every time. I get great pub.
Great little pub. They've also got I forget the name of it, there's the tiny little pub as well in Manchester that's just a little hole in the wall with a bar down it. It's
perfect.
Great.
Simple as. And then we get the news, of course, as well, that Macduff... So Macduff had been sent for to court and had decided he wasn't going to accept that invitation. And then we get told that Macduff has, in fact, fled to England, where, you know, sensible people do flee to because it's such a good country.
He had the black guy in a horror movie reaction. I ain't here for that shit. And then leaves.
And Macbeth responds to this very proportionately by murdering Macduff's wife and son.
Makes sense. I mean, the witches didn't say anything about his family or children. They just said specifically Macduff. It was like the most specific thing they've ever said to Macbeth outside of just saying, you will be Thane of Cawdor and king. And he goes, I've got to kill their children. I've got to kill his children. Mm. Well, of course, and again, like I said, in the adaptation, it's interesting because in the play, it's the murderers, they go and assassinate. Mm. He really found like the most unscrupulous people in all of Scotland and England to just go, you're all right with killing women and children, aren't you? Is there a reason for it? No, not really. No. Okay, all right, sure, let's go for it.
I don't remember having to explain myself to you, Plex.
Good point.
Yeah.
Whereas in the film, it's interesting that they have him deliver the killing blow himself by lighting the pyre that burns all of them.
Mm.
You know, I don't know which is which is worse, this kind of like abstract, detached brutality of play, of play Macbeth, or the more hands-on tyranny of the film version. I think that's an interesting contrast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he does obviously murder others by his own hand in the battle. He kills young Seward in the final battle. But again, it's in a battle. So it's one of those... Macbeth has been killing people on the battlefield for most of his adult life. And it's never been considered a sin because it's warfare. It's, you know, they're all marching. I'm not going to say it's all consensual. It's not how feudalism works. But you get my point. That there is
to a certain extent, there is that bit. Like, it's like in Blackadder, where it's like they just go and meet in a field, and eventually at some point it's like, I guess we fight now.
Yeah, right.
I guess it's time for us to charge at one another.
Mm. But there is another point to this as well, with what you were saying, which is that, oh, well, and now I'm just going to have to kill his children. It's like, are you though? But the thing is that...
Do you? Really?
No one's asking you to do this, Macbeth.
Like, even the witches are like, ooh, didn't see that. Ooh, that's not what we meant.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.